What's up, family? You're listening to Law and Disorder. I'm your host, Kat Brooks, and this is Resistance in Residence, where we profile artists using their gifts to change the world. Our Resistance in Residence artist this week is comedian, playwright, and educator Misha Mosley, PhD. Misha, you want me to call you doctor? I will happily call you Dr. Black Woman.
I appreciate you. Misha's good. Misha's
Okay.
good.
All right. I've got to check because I don't be calling my sisters with their degrees doctor enough. That's like 6 years of your life.
It's a long time. It's real life.
In academia, as a
You
black
gotta
person.
know. I always tell people you gotta know what you want and why you're there. I had a beautiful experience.
You did. What did you
Yeah,
want and why
community.
were you there?
I was there to get the degree so I could do whatever I want with the rest of my life. I finished in 2003 and I was 30 years old. And I knew that I just wanted to be able to rock out and not have to deal with any shenanigans.
Yeah.
And so the degree has opened up a bunch of doors and has allowed me to, live a fuller life,
Yeah.
really, in terms of balance. And because I'm my first my passion, my love is in education. And I was born to make people laugh, to bring joy. And so capitalism isn't set up for me to be able to do those things the way I want to do them. So the degree has afforded me the opportunity to carve out my own path because otherwise I'm trying to fit into people's boxes and I don't. So that for me was, I knew that I'm interested in research. I'm interested in all these things and teach. Passionate about teaching. That's not my only interest. That's not my only passion. That's not my only calling. So let me deal with and that. And my ver Berkeley was a that going to Berkeley at that time was very different than it is now. I don't know if I would have. I definitely wouldn't have had the same experience. There aren't as many Black people or people of color as there were then, including professors. So, that's where I met Ruthie Gilmore. That's where I met Margot Okazawa-Ray from Combahee River Collective. You know what I mean? Like,
Yeah.
that's where I met the folks who you're just not seeing them in the same spaces in the same ways. So.
I am, that is the first conversation I've had with a black person that has gone through academia to the degree that you went through academia that has a beautiful story. I was a fellow in the abolitionist part of the Black Studies Department. And the black students that were there full time, oh my gosh, they're gonna need therapy. Shout out to the Black Studies Department faculty, Dr. Nikki Jones, right? Them folks is banging, and they are banging against all of the odds. What? How did you become so passionate about education?
So when I was a teenager, I was I entered high school. I went to Brooklyn Technical High School, what I will always say is the greatest high school in the world. Back when it was black, this continues to be a theme in my life, where it's like tech now versus tech then is just different. But I went in wanting to be a lawyer, and I saw just a ton of, I did an internship and just saw like shadiness, just corruptions and politics. And I didn't want to, I was like, I'm gonna get caught up. Somebody gonna offer to buy my mama a house and I'm gonna get caught up. No lawyer for me. And I started to think, who are the people who are making my life powerful? And they were my teachers. And I was having such a positive experience there, and I loved history. So really, when I was 15, I knew that I wanted to teach. And I set a course throughout high school and college to set myself up to do that. I was raised to believe that my part of my responsibility is to leave the world better than I found it. And so given that the law was not the path I was going to take and politics weren't the path, I felt teaching history and teaching the truth about history and helping people understand the current political and civil context was really what I was meant to do. And so since I was 15, that's what I've been about.
Draw a line from there to founding the Black Teacher Project.
So I started teaching. I moved out to San Francisco to teach. After a few years, I got burnt out and just felt like I was having great relationships with students, but I wasn't able to figure out how to reach them academically to the place that I wanted to. And so then I ran away to grad school, got my doctorate. And when I graduated, and even throughout, I had always been interested in professional development. So even while I was teaching, I always wanted to help myself and other people become better teachers. So most of my work after graduation, so from 2003 to about 2013 or so, had been in helping people through professional development. And it was always about racial equity. And what would happen is after the meeting, all the Black folks would come to me in the back of the room after we had a whole session, sometimes day-long session. And then we have another session with just the Black folks. And I was like, no, I'm tired. We can't do all that. I want to do something. My dissertation was about Black teachers. I wanted to do something to help Black teachers. But what really did it was I ran into a former student who had not gotten good grades, didn't even graduate from the high school where I taught her. I ran into her at a professional development session that I was leading, and she was a teacher. And she was talking to me about her experience, and some of what she was experiencing, I had experienced in terms of that push out, in terms of people questioning your capacity, your intelligence, all that stuff, right? And so I said, let me take my years of experience and knowledge that I've put into racial equity in general, and let me make sure that she has a good, loving, powerful career as a classroom teacher. And so I took that stuff that I've been doing, and that's when the Black Teacher Project was born. It was really about supporting Belinda Bellinger, San Francisco's own, and she was a much better teacher than I ever was. I mean, anytime I was in her classroom, there was joy, highest test scores in her school, all the things. And I recognize that with the right supports, Black teachers can do amazing things. And so I wanted to continue to take what I'm learning in research in equity work and make sure that I'm pouring into Black teachers specifically and creating spaces where we can make meaning and be ourselves, because school systems were designed to destroy us, not to liberate us. So if we're going to use them as a path to liberation, we got to have our minds right. Otherwise, we'll get caught up in the same system of white supremacy, just in Black bodies.
Thank you for that. One last question, I promise. Then we'll move on to you being a comedian and playwright and all the other brilliant things you do with your life. I had actually written, so folks, my listeners know, some of them know, I started my career as an organizer in education advocacy in South Central. Not as a teacher, as an organizer, letting young people lead the way. And what along those years when that was the center of my organizing work, right? We used to talk a lot, and this was the question I had for you, was to talk about why Black teachers are important to Black students, why and educational outcomes. But on the landing page, the homepage of the website, it says every child deserves a Black teacher. So I want you to go there. Yeah, there you go. That's what it says on
You know, wearing my shirt
the
today, wearing my shirt today.
website, y'all, too.
So every child is, so two things. Black teachers, it increase positive outcomes for all kids. We know for Black children, we see a decrease in discipline and increase in graduation rates. The reason why we say every child deserves a Black teacher is because our disposition toward education as a tool of liberation, not just a tool for capitalism, is what undergirds this ethic of care. So there's this concept of the warm demander that is a description of what Black teachers have always done. I'm going to love up on you and I'm going to hold you accountable. So it's a both and schools are designed to sort us into workers, managers, and owners, right? That's the tracking system. And so when the reason why we say every child deserves a Black teacher is that every child deserves to be taught from a place of love. Every child deserves to understand a love of learning that's not simply tied to you being a laborer. And Black teachers come with that disposition where we've made it through a system that was designed to destroy us and have made the choice to give back. Most Black teachers aren't really in it for the money. You know what I mean? This is not, this, if you go ahead, if you're if you're a product of a Black family and you made it all the way through getting your degree and you decide to turn around and become a teacher, you're up to something else. And so we want that something else that is about freedom to permeate all races, all demographics. We work with folks who are in private schools, and people will say, well, why private schools? I said, who's going to be running these businesses that are on our neck? These kids that are in private school now. And if they can have a Black teacher who can help them understand the human experience, because as Black people, we're closer to our humanity than a lot of other folks who are caught up in these systems. So any progress we've made in race relations in this country I believe, have been connected to Black teachers and Black people interacting with non-Black folks. The Underground Railroad. It's not like Harriet was just like, hey, everybody, we're just gonna go. You know what I'm saying? At some point, you had to interface with a white person in order to actually get through, right? So, how do we make sure that our co-conspirators have their minds right from an early age, that we can minimize what we need to undo when they're adults? If we get them when they're students, if they can see Black people beyond the images in the media, we're ahead of the game.
Fun fact about the Underground Railroad that I didn't know that blew my mind. You probably know because you're an educator with a PhD, but my listeners probably don't know. I went to Maine because I love lobster. That was really all, and I hid in this little secluded community thing because white people in Maine are often really racist, and it's not necessarily a safe place for us. And I was by myself.
Facts.
I went on this tour, and you already said, y'all, Maine was part of the Underground Railroad. Who
Absolutely.
knew? Anyway.
Absolutely. Yes.
Fun facts
Yes.
on Law and Disorder. All right, let's move on. So I got to meet you or come in actual regular contact with you as a writer. You are a playwright.
I
Talk
am.
about when you discovered the love of words and when you started writing plays.
I started writing plays. So my trajectory has been being voted class comedian in high school. I always got something to say. I always got jokes. Improv comedy in college, and hosting a bunch of stages all over the Bay and over time. And I started to develop this one-woman show that was coming out of hosting. I wanted to tell the stories of Black lesbians. This is around 2006, 2007. And I had this opportunity to develop this work. So for me, writing has always been a challenge. I have a tough time identifying as a writer. So even as you say, you're a playwright, and I'm like, yeah, I am. It's been a journey because I am a verbal processor. And so that first play, for example, was in my head and improv'd for years until we started applying to festivals where we had to give them a script. And so my process was, I'm going to do it and we're going to transcribe it. And then I can get into the text. And then I can get into the, because what comes through me, it's taken me a while to understand that those words, because I say them first, instead of writing them first, doesn't make me any less a writer. They're still coming from me. And then once they get to the page and I'm massaging them and really bringing them into, that's part of the process. So it's really come from things that have been inside of me needing to come out. And with that first play, really wanted to give, I mean, I say that because that first play also happened after I wrote a whole dissertation. So the part where I have this imposter syndrome about writing. It's just we all have healing to do. It's an old story, but it's really now that I can take pride in my process and honor it for what it is. Because in the dissertation phase, so this is the late 90s, early 2000s, we had like Dragon software. It wasn't any of this. You could just talk into the, you know what I'm saying? I had to get a grant to buy the CDs. To put in the thing, to do the talk to text, to be able to finish my work. It was recording on cassette tapes and then sending them somewhere to be transcribed or transcribing them myself. So for me, my journey to writing is really about allowing myself to be in my process of words and ideas coming through me in whatever ways. And, obviously, there's still it's paired with handwriting. I'm still a big I love a hand, I love a good journal, and I keep telling everybody you can put all this stuff in Google Docs if you want. And when they turn off the internet, your feelings are going to be hurt. So the historian in me loves a good archive. Let's go to the basement where the books are. So I always have to, anytime I have an opportunity to talk to folks, I'm like, at least print your stuff out. All these pictures you take on your phone. Once a year, just print 12, just print some stuff out. And people don't like clutter, but have you been to the cloud? Because I haven't been to the cloud. So I don't know who all is over in the cloud, but I know it's in these picture frames in my house. I know what's in the journals I wrote. I know what's in the scripts I've printed out. It's a long-winded answer to your question, but that's what's coming up for me.
This is your time for you to talk as much as you would like to. When they turn off the internet, it's so real. It's so real.
Listen.
When I'm talking to people about what we do now, I'm like, listen, better figure out what we're going to do when they start cutting off all of the things that allow us to organize. Internet, phone,
To do what
power,
we do.
water, all of it.
All of it. Listen, I'm in Chicago and people laugh at me because I rock with paper maps. I rock with paper maps.
You know, you can make a fortune teaching people like me to read the maps, because
It's so important.
we don't
You read
know how.
Powerball and Sower. You read Powerball and Sower.
Yes,
Octavia Butler. You got it. Our ability to navigate orienteering. So I've driven across the country about 3 times in the last 5 years. And I have a road atlas and I have my maps. And people laugh at me. And I was like, of course I use GPS. But I was in rural Louisiana and there was an accident on I-10. I was going from Houston to New Orleans. And I could see it was going to take me like 3 extra hours and night was falling. And literally the GPS took me off of I-10 to some back road and then I lost the signal. And so now I'm on the back road at dusk, far from home. And I just busted out my atlas and saw where I was and got where I was going. And it's those types of things. So it's not an either or, it's a both and. So yes, I love teaching people how to read a map. It
Raised
brings me
you?
joy.
Who raised you?
Mom.
Because they did a good job.
Thank you. My mother and my godfather. My
Okay.
godfather was a union organizer. My mother, was a receptionist, model, actress, and so I'm living her artistic dreams. So anytime I step on the stage, I do it for my mother. And when I can, I bring her with me.
That's
So
beautiful.
yeah, she loves to come to the comedy shows and the plays. When I just did a show in New York at Dixon Place, she was right there in the front row. And most of my shows are interactive, some interactive piece, and that's our favorite part.
I love it. I love it. I love it. Talk to us about where my girl's at.
So Where My Girls At was that first piece that I wrote. And it's a comedy about Black lesbians. I play 5 different characters. The premise is that they're competing in a show called Black Beauty, America's Next Top Negress. So this is when reality shows were just popping off. And there were going to be 10 Black women living in a house. And so with Kinsey, 10%, one of them was going to be a lesbian. And it was up to the audience to choose which lesbian would be on the show. And so I presented 4 archetypes of people I knew. So players, the player, now we would call her a stud. Lady D is the diva, and the diva is modeled after my mother. Even though my mother identifies as straight, that's the first diva in my life. And then as I've met other divas who are queer, I'm like, oh, okay, a diva is a diva is a diva. There was Ziggy, who was most closely aligned with me. She's the nerd, just earnest and political, going to all the marches and means it. And Sista, who's the earth mother with her drum and her sage, who's also, I mean, there's a little bit of me in all of them. But yeah, we toured that show around the country, got nominated. And for me, it was important around visibility and making sure that people, and the same is true with the Black Teacher Project. I want folks to understand the diversity of Blackness that exists. I want folks to be able to see and hear the stories of who we are, and how we get down.
I love that. All right, Misha, we gotta talk to me about comedy. Now, you said you was voted co comedian,
Class
class
comedian in
comedian.
high school.
You was voted class comedian. When did you start making people laugh, and
Ooh.
when did you know you was funny? Like, when did you know you was funny? How did funny start for you?
Funny started definitely as a tall girl in school. I was in the back of the class, the back of the line. Well, that's nothing but opportunity. So I stayed cutting up. Now I was in the gifted and talented and all that. My mother was not having any no shenanigans, like get good grades, do what you're supposed to do. But I can't remember a time when I wasn't cracking jokes. I feel like I found my funny in high school. By the time that vote came about, I was fully in it. And so for me, the trans, it was all about expression. How could I express it? In high school, I did a speech and debate. There wasn't a whole lot of comedy. It was more dramatic work, more of the acting that I was doing there. But by the time I got to college, I joined an improv comedy troupe, and I was the first freshman to, it was like a super competitive thing back then. I was first freshman to be admitted, and I was definitely the first Black person, went to PWI. And that's where I found my funny in improv. And what I know is that that is a gift that I was given. Stuff comes in my head. It's a curse and a gift sometimes, because sometimes I have to not say the things that comes in my head. It comes so fast. I'd be like, well, watch yourself. And so yeah, that opportunity to release with improv, you have to be fully present in order to actually like let the funny come. And that's when I really, really felt funny, because I could see how things were flowing through me. I wasn't trying. It was just about being present and paying attention. And now, as I move, from improv to hosting stages to Where My Girls At, part of what happened with Where My Girls At, it's hard to have a one-woman show, travel, the production costs and all. So from there, I moved into stand-up. And because it was all I needed was one mic, And so I would take a lot of what I would do on stages and just make jokes out of that. So I've been focused on stand-up for probably the last couple of decades. It's been a minute now. Decade, I don't know, sometime. What is time? Before a while. And so from stand-up, now working on the new one-woman show, The Lesbian Lab, which is a bit of a compilation of some of the stand-up, but really looking at, Where My Girls At was playing these characters. Now I want to tell stories of middle-aged Black lesbians, because the representation shift from 2007, 2009, when I was starting Where My Girls At, to now, just in the media, just in what we're seeing, is so different. And I feel like for, I'm a strong, passionate Gen Xer. And when I think about what it means to be in this generation, we're small but mighty. It's so unique, it's so precious, and I want to continue to tell our stories. And when people laugh, they're open. So when I was teaching, if you ask any of my former students, they'll, oh, Miss Mosley was hella funny. She had us cracking up, because when they're open, I can teach them in a different way, right? And so for me, if you come to my shows, you're going to learn something, because I'm a teacher. I can't help it. So I'll have a joke about the breakfast program with the Black Panthers, but you're going to know that that free breakfast program was a precursor to free and reduced lunch, which a lot of people don't know, right? So yeah, here's the joke, but also catch these facts. So the funny and the teaching to me go hand in hand. And it's not all like preachy teaching, but it is like, okay, I didn't know that. But you're laughing. And for, I have so many friends. I just had a show last week. I have so many friends who are straight. And as I continue my life, I'm like, you're going to get some insight into lesbian community that you may or may not want, but you're going to get this. You're going to understand what we're dealing with now. And what it's like to be in the club at 50 something, trying to act your age and have good fluid in your knees. All of it. Because you try to get down with the young folks and then you can't get back up. So it's a thing. It's a thing. But I want to tell those stories because they're fun, they're funny, and they're affirming. That's a lot of what I'm up to.
Isha Mosley, where can people find you, follow you, get more of this black fire brilliance?
MishaMosley.com. If you want to learn about the Black Teacher Project, blackteacherproject.org. And I'm in these internet streets doing my best.
You all have been listening to Law and Disorder. I am your host, Kat Brooks. This is Resistance in Residence, where we feature artists using their talents to change the world. And this week's artist is comedian, playwright, and educator, Misha Mosley, PhD.